Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender in for Neil today on this beautiful Wednesday fall afternoon. I love the fall because you finally start to kind of get settled, or at least I do. In my life, all of the hustle and bustle kind of starts to settle down right now. And then, of course, it gears up again just when you take the time to breathe. So it's just been a nice time to settle down. But what I've noticed is that you kind of get in this new rhythm every season. And I don't know if God had that in mind when he created all these seasons for us. But your body, your mind, your soul, it kind of settles into each season. And for fall, it's like this preparation. Is this just a Midwestern thing, maybe, Ted? Like we get prepared
for the
doldrums of winter?
Right. I think that's definitely an element. I mean, people in California are a warm place aren't thinking the same as we are right now, probably.
You're right. They don't ever have to have the preparation, except for preparation of constant sun and beautiful weather.
How rough, huh?
it does sound a little rough, but I won't complain because this is my favorite time of year. So I was reading just about this hustle bustle, this whole phenomenon that we get into. And just one generation ago, listen to this, sociologists were predicting that with technology, Americans would work far more effectively, and access to information, they said, would allow us to complete our work at such an accelerated speed that we would actually have too much spare time.
Ooh, people would love that.
Yes.
On the surface.
Right. Do you have too much spare time?
Nope.
Has technology created more spare time for you?
No, because now I have to check my email and go through it all. It seems like there's more to do.
Yes. I think that when I had a pager, I could just turn that little pager off and then I would be done for the day. But that is impossible now.
Back to the early 90s, the pager.
It's true. I know. Beep, beep. I still cringe when I hear that, when that sign. But when the world is bigger, it's faster. It seems like the quicker we can get things done, the more important we are, the more celebrated and valued we are. So it may seem silly that we go on a search for smallness, but we are going to talk about that today. My guest for today says that that is exactly what we need to do. Start searching for a little bit of smallness. In the pages of her beautiful book called Simply Tuesday, Emily Freeman reveals how the kingdom of God can be found in ordinary days, quiet moments, and honest confessions. So let me tell you a little bit about her, and we will get her on the show. Emily Freeman is the author of a few books. A Million Little Ways is one of them, Graceful, and Grace for the Good Girl. Her latest is Simply Tuesday, Small Moment Living in a Fast-Moving World. She also writes online at Chatting at the Sky and Hopeology. She lives in Greensboro, North Carolina, with her husband and three children. Welcome, Emily.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here on a Tuesday.
I know. I thought that was, well, we planned it. Let's go with that.
Perfect.
We planned it for a Tuesday. So what was your inspiration of calling this Simply Tuesday? What's the story behind Simply Tuesday?
Well, if you think about the week, Tuesday is really the most ordinary day of the week. I mean, Wednesday is like middle of the week. Thursday has great TV. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are the weekend. And then Monday, you might say, is kind of ordinary, except for the fact that we always sort of look to Monday as, okay, we got to gear up for Monday. We sort of prepare for it as the beginning of the week. And Tuesday is just kind of like, huh, Tuesday. You might, you might like plan for a party, send out the invitations, but you certainly wouldn't have a party on a Tuesday. And so for me, Tuesday has become sort of the day that I, instead of being the day that I brush under the rug and sort of move past, I started to sit in the midst of it and recognize that my real life can actually be found in the moments that I find on my Tuesday, simply because it is the most ordinary day of the week. I think a lot of life is mostly lived on those ordinary moments. It's not really in brightness or in darkness that most of our life can be found, but it's really in the medium light of a regular Tuesday. And so for me, that's kind of where it started, is when my kids were really young, my husband was a pastor, and Sunday for us wasn't really a Sabbath. It was more of a work day. And so I kind of had to look to another day of the week to be a resting day. But for me, it was like, well, Tuesday's kind of normal and regular, but I could find the time there to sort of settle in to where I actually was so that I could move through my week as the person I really was, mindful of my real life. And I chose to celebrate those moments instead of sort of move past them to just hurry up to the weekend.
So you are an author, you're a blogger, you're a mom to three kids. Your husband is even though he's no longer a pastor, he's, you know, has his own job in life that probably keeps him busy as well. So life sounds kind of crazy for both of you. What happened in your background and where you were driven to kind of talk to all of us about finding these simple moments? There had to be some sort of a breakthrough at some point in time where you said, ah, something's different about this. I need to share it with other people.
Well, you know, in your intro, and I'm so glad you mentioned it, just sort of the hustle and bustle that moves us through life. And I think technology is, I feel like I read a similar article about them thinking, the predicting into the future that there would be so much free time that what would people do with all of it? And I just the opposite. And it's one thing to have busy schedules and full lives. I think that's kind of unavoidable. But it's an entirely another thing when the fast-moving world is not only moving around me, but within me. And I started to feel like, you know, I had written a couple of books. My kids were growing. They were starting to get involved in things. My husband has a nonprofit ministry of his own that he leads. And so I was just sort of in this kind of, I wasn't completely burned out, but I was on the road. And so that constant buzzing kind of, and sometimes it's what keeps us up at night, the things that we, you know, you lay down at night and instead of falling asleep, you start making mental to-do lists in your head. And I felt like that was starting to get out of hand for me. And so I know I have a lot left to learn, but one thing I know for sure is the language of the game, the pull to comparison, to competition, to building my life, and the feeling that the work I do is never quite enough. And so for me, I begin to feel like that this is not the life that I see in Jesus. This is the life that I have made for myself. And so what might it look like to slow down and recognize the kingdom of God where I am, rather than trying to move towards something? I don't know if maybe you can relate to sometimes feeling like you're rushing through, you're moving towards something, but when you stop to think about it, you're like, wait, what am I rushing about? Where am I headed? Why am I moving so fast? And I think there is something to be said for, and I've heard this term lately, hurry sickness, where it's an actual thing you can Google and there's a definition for it, that it's sort of like you just kind of can't settle into one task. It's kind of the disease of the multitask. And I started to see it in myself. And so this book was really me diving into the concept of what might it look like to settle into the moments where I actually am and to see God within them.
I remember when my husband once, I was exactly what you said. I was making all these lists. I got up in the middle of the night. He got up early, and I had already been up. I'd been up since like 2 a.m, and I was fixing my calendar. I'd cleaned the house. I had organized the closet. And he's like, what are you doing? I said, I don't know, but I'm winning. I'm winning. And he said, who in the world are you competing with? And I said, I don't know. I don't know, but I'm winning. So, yes, it does. That's why when I started reading your book, I just started laughing so many times because I thought, this is true life, that we are running like crazy people trying to win something, but we're not really sure what it is. And it can even happen in our spiritual life because I remember just when I first came to know who the Lord was in my life, I'm like, I'm going to be amazing. I'm going to be amazing for Jesus. Yes. I'm going to be the best Jesus person ever. And so it doesn't stop even when you're talking about your faith.
Oh, man, it sure doesn't. And the thing that I've realized is that race has no finish line. And that's what has been for me. It's like I need to take myself out of this race. But the question has been, what does that even look like and how do you do it?
Mm-hmm. Well, and when you're parenting, especially when your kids are small, you wrote something about how you need to just recognize those small moments to be present with your kids. And I remember very distinctly that waking up in the morning thinking, okay, today I have to do the same cycle 17 times over again, get the kids up, feed them, clean them up, get them down for nap, change them, make more food, another nap. I remember just thinking, I don't think I can do it one more day. But it was in those small moments, just as you said, that I needed to learn to find just where God was and what he was trying to show me through that. Just talk about how that has been for you in trying to find those small moments and God in them.
Well, you just described a life of Tuesday. It's like my whole life when the kids were little, it's like, okay, every day is Tuesday. It just keeps going on and on. And but when it was a particular time in my life when John was sort of transitioning from being a pastor of a church, you know, a youth pastor at a church. He had done that for almost 12 years. Knowing we had a vocational change in our future. And like I said, I had written a few books and there were some things going on. One of our daughters was struggling through some anxiety and fear that was kind of unexplained. And it was like that thing when you're a parent, you want to fix it, yet it's a person. And you can't fix a person. So that she didn't need a fixer. She needed a journeyer. But as the mom, I'm like, I've got to make this better. But I couldn't find an answer. So I was desperate for a perspective. I wanted a big picture perspective of my life and someone to kind of tell me, like, here's the large 5,000-foot view. So I went to a friend, mentor, who's also a counselor of ours. His name is Steve. And I sort of told him what I just told you, all of the things. And there, please help me see this big picture. And instead, he said three words I'll never forget and that have sort of shaped my life since then. He said to me, celebrate your smallness. And in that moment, I wanted to say, that helps me 0% amount. Celebrating my smallness, that's nothing. But I realized in that moment that I also, aside from just feeling overwhelmed with not connecting with that phrase, I also felt like that is a great relief. And I want to discover what that looks like in my actual life.
Well, we're talking about celebrating our small moment living in a fast-moving world. I'm speaking with author Emily Freeman today about her book, Simply Tuesday. We're going to talk a little bit more about that as we come back after this break. If you're listening in and you think that this is a book that you would enjoy, maybe you have a comment to make or a question for Emily, give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. We do have a few copies to give away if you get a hold of Carissa and want to share a comment or question with her. I'm sure she'd love to take it. Again, 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-2484. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
I come in simplicity, longing for purity to worship you.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender, and today I'm talking with author Emily Freeman about her book, Simply Tuesday, Small Moment Living in a Fast-Moving World. Emily, when we went on our break, you had been talking about looking at yourself as small, and you make the distinction in your book between seeing ourselves as small as in small compared to the ocean or to the world around us, and that other way you would look at yourselves as small in a negative way, like you're not important. Help us make that distinction as to what's a good way to look at ourselves and see ourselves as small.
It's such an important distinction because when you hear the word small, at least when I hear the word small, celebrate your smallness, I think, okay, so that makes me feel powerless. That makes me feel unimportant and unseen. And I don't think that's the way that my friend, when he told me, celebrate your smallness, I think he meant it more in the way of, like you said, when you are standing on a mountaintop and you look up and you see nature around you and you realize how very small you are in it. But I don't think anyone would stand there and say that they felt terrible about that. I think usually what happens in us is a sense of awe and a sense of wonder and a sense that someone else is in control and it's not me, and I like it that way. Often I put the word small with the word too, T-O-O, like my jeans are too small, the top is too small, my closet's too small. And so I tend to paint it in negative light, but I'm learning to see the beauty of smallness. You know, Christ compared the kingdom of heaven, that it belongs to children, small children, that he said it's like a mustard seed. He talked about how we're salt. I mean, can you imagine something smaller than salt? And he used all these regular, normal, small images of our really ordinary lives that we kind of encounter every day to compare to something as great as his kingdom. And I think that's something really important to pay attention to.
So when you're talking about small moments, then define that for us. What are those small moments and how do we celebrate them?
Yeah, so our life is really just a string of small moments. We have this moment now, we'll have the next moment coming, and it just continues on that way. As we all know, though, I think there's a tendency to, when you hear that, celebrate the small moments, lean into small moment living. There might be a temptation to think, you know, yes, let's cherish those small moments with our family, or the wink across the room, or the way that he looked at me, or her sweet kisses, or the goodnight prayers. And of course, all of those things are to be cherished and recognized as true life. But I also have really wanted to dig in and understand the fact that all of life is made up of not just the beautiful small moments, but also the difficult and the hard and the lonely and those small moments where you feel overlooked and unseen and unappreciated. And so where is Christ in those moments? And what I have found as I have embraced my whole life, not just the lovely small, but also the difficult small, I've discovered Christ lives in both of them, and then he often hangs out just on the other side of ordinary, just on the other side of my frustration, if I'm willing to walk into it. Because I think sometimes I look at the small moments of, like if I'm in a conversation, for example, with someone, and something that they say, meaning to or not, sort of feels dismissive to me. Maybe I feel like they hurt my feelings, something happened, and it's a small moment. It was small, it happened quickly, they moved on, I moved on. But as I maybe retrace my steps in the day, like from that night if I'm going to bed, I realize that was the moment when something, if you look back on the day, you think, oh, that moment when they said that thing that bothered me, that was a small moment, but it really kind of changed the course of the day, and I didn't realize it till I thought about it. You know how you can do that, these little small moments? And I've discovered that those moments, that is where the kingdom of God wants to show up in my life. That is where Christ, those little moments, is where Christ wants to reveal himself to me as enough. Because if the cross wasn't big enough for those small moments, how can we possibly believe that he can carry and hold the large moments of life, the large disappointments? And so I've learned to really start to pay attention to those Tuesday kind of beautiful small moments, but also the difficult ones. And I feel like that's my own personal spiritual formation is really becoming, that's where I'm being formed, is in those difficult moments and where Christ wants to keep kind company with me.
Hmm. Well, as you're telling that story, I remember reading in your book just you talking about how someone had said something that hurt you and you had to kind of decide, well, is this a time I'm going to have a conversation with that person? Am I going to let it go? And I underlined this. It says, the decision concerning when to speak up and let others in or when to stay silent requires discernment in the presence of God. So where do you go when you have some discerning to do? How do you connect with God in that small moment so that he's the one leading you into what your next decision is?
Man, Joe, that is such a great question and one that I have wrestled with, because I've often felt, I don't know if shame is the right word. I think there's a difference between guilt and shame. I think guilt is good. It's good that we feel guilt. I think shame is never okay. Shame is saying that I'm not enough and I'm not worthy of love. I think I do sometimes feel a sense of shame in a bad way for being the way that I am. In other words, sometimes I feel like I get my feelings hurt too easily, or I wish I could just sort of speak my mind and not care what people think. And I think maybe there's some maturing there that is true and could be. But I am learning as I begin to bring those small hurts, those small moments, and be aware of them in Christ's presence, I'm learning to let my anxieties and my fears and my hurts rise up to the surface so that they don't fester. And instead of despising the way that I am and sort of stuffing it down, that becoming fully myself is sort of about admitting what those things are that hurt me, and that our gifts can also often be our burdens. I think sometimes that it's a gift that I can empathize with people and I see where they're coming from. That can also be a burden when I feel things too deeply, maybe, or I get hurt too easily. But if I didn't have that, then I wouldn't have the gift either. And so the like what you asked, the tension point, though, is when I am in an interaction with someone and I have to make a decision, is this a time where I say something to them, or is this a time when I keep it to myself? Because I have a history of stuffing. And so I think maybe that's not healthy, blah, blah, blah. But I've discovered, I ask myself one question when I consider whether or not I should speak up or not, and that's whether or not I'm being led by love or pushed around by fear. I think you can kind of, when you get quiet with yourself in the presence of God, where he lives within my spirit, he will kind of let me know. I'll feel a sense of opening towards love or of closing up towards fear and kind of begin to know whether or not he's leading me to speak. And I can trust his voice in that. And sometimes you speak, and I wish I hadn't, and maybe it wasn't right, but the only way to know is sometimes to sort of listen to his voice, take a step, do the next right thing, and then kind of reflect and evaluate, okay, was that the right way to go? I think he's less concerned with us making the exact right choice and more concerned with being a relational image bearer of him in the world. And sometimes that looks really messy.
Hmm. Well, and I have found for myself as well, if I take that step back and I think and I don't speak, or say I take the step back and I think and then I do speak, as I'm rehashing that later in the day, I've learned something regardless of whether or not I spoke or did not speak. And then the next day that instance comes, or the next time that instance comes up again, I'm wiser for it because I've allowed God to speak into that moment and kind of teach me through what might have been a better thing or what have you learned through that. And that
I
is gold.
That.
It's gold.
Absolutely. It is. It is. And sometimes I don't give myself permission to do that and to realize that, you know, the end isn't really the point. Sometimes it is the process, and knowing that my friend Jesus stands between me and every possible future, and then he goes with me, and that's really where the gift and the life really is.
Mm. In fact, I loved the end of that chapter that I was talking about, that you had written about a story of Dallas Willard, who, of course, people may know as just was a world-renowned theology professor for so many years, a theologian, and someone irritated him in class or said something antagonistic, a student, and rather than shutting him down or giving him the facts, he simply closed class. And later on, he said to a student, when they asked, why didn't you shut him down? He said, I'm practicing the discipline of not having the last word. And
isn't
I thought,
that brilliant?
I need to do that. I need to do that more often.
Oh, talk about small moment living, man. He could have just blasted that student, but he chose not to. I love it.
Yes. So we do learn from all of those little times when we could have, should have, would have, because the next time we might be a little bit better. As you are just thinking about those times when you have relationships, that you're trying to build relationships with other people, where do you sit with the whole vulnerability as far as when do you know when you can be vulnerable, or do you tend to be a little more closed off and think a little more before you speak?
Oh, man, that we could talk about that one all day long, couldn't we?
I shouldn't ask you that right before a big break.
Yeah, you really shouldn't. But I will say this. I once heard Brené Brown say there's a difference between intimacy and vulnerability. And so vulnerability is more like sort of being yourself in the midst of others. But there's an intimacy that you really would only share with those who are really, really close to you. And that's sort of unpacking that has helped me. Like, okay, is this an intimate thing or is this a vulnerable thing? And that one is way deeper than another. The intimacy is way deeper and personal. So that's kind of helped me think through what does that look like in my own life.
Well, I'm talking with Emily Freeman today. She's written a great book called Simply Tuesday, Small Moment Living in a Fast Moving World. Maybe you need to slow down a little bit or would like to. Her book can give you some great tips on how to do that and how to invite Christ in to those small moments in your life. We do have a few books to give away. If you'd like to get one or get one to give someone else, please give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And we'll be right back with Emily Freeman. Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Having a great conversation today with author Emily Freeman and her book, Simply Tuesday, Small Moment Living in a Fast Moving World, talking about just taking those simple moments in the day, being able to connect with Christ in a way that's going to impact your life. And Emily, you tell just a great story, something I could really relate to, about some benches that somehow showed up in the middle of your cul-de-sac and how that changed the way that people talk to each other. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So I look for metaphor all over my life, I feel like. And these benches and our cul-de-sac have become a real grounding metaphor for me to think about how I sort of see God in my life and my relationship to others. It was basically several years ago, we moved into a cul-de-sac two houses down from my husband John's brother and his wife and family, which some people hear that and they're like, what? You live on the same cul-de-sac as your in-laws? That's crazy. But it's great for us. And so we spent a lot of time outside, and we ended up getting a couple of benches out there because we were out there so often that we needed a place to sit. And so we now have these two benches facing one another in this sort of grassy area in the middle of the cul-de-sac, and the kids play and they sort of ride their bikes in the circle. Well, we also, aside from our brother-in-law living two houses down, on the cul-de-sac, there are also several neighbors who are in their mid-80s, maybe. And many of them, several of them, have lived here for 45 years. They had their kids grow up in the cul-de-sac. And so one day I noticed, as I was making dinner, a couple of those neighbors walked out into the center of the cul-de-sac, and it was almost as if they had planned it. Like, they walked out at the same time, they sat down on those benches, and they started to chat. And I was like, oh, isn't that great? I've never seen them. I've seen them talk outside before, maybe at their mailboxes, but they've never had a place to sit. And so they sat out there for a little while. I got nosy, went out, chatted with them. They were talking about nothing life-changing. They were just talking about the weather and their kids and grandkids and Greek food, you know, all kinds of things. And so I went back in the house. But what I noticed was they stayed out there for over an hour. And it was so interesting to me because I thought, I have never seen them do that before. It wasn't that before they didn't want to be together, but before it wasn't easy. Now that they had benches to sit on, the benches made all the difference. But these benches weren't fancy. They weren't expensive or impressive or flashy. It's not like we had this complicated problem and these benches were the answer. But they simply gave the neighbors a place to be, a place to rest and come together on just an ordinary day. And so in my own life, I have thought of those benches often when I try to make things too complicated. Sometimes I feel myself sort of getting carried away. Like we were talking about before, you know, maybe making lists. I know it's a sure sign that I need to stop and figure out where the bench is in this moment when I start to make a list, a to-do list, before I've had my coffee in the morning. Mm-hmm. If I'm making a list and I hadn't had my coffee, it's time to settle. And it's the same in my work. When I see all the reasons why, this is what it is for me. The trigger for me is I see what other people are doing, maybe other authors or other people in my same line of work, what they're doing over there. And I'm tempted to compare that to what I'm doing over here. And maybe I need to make my platform wider and put brighter lights in the bulbs because I want to make a good impression. And I'm determined that my work is the best and is excellent. But I've begun to ask myself the question, what if I began to tear that letter apart and use the wood to build a bench instead? What might that look like in my work life, in my relationships, in my family? And so those simple benches, like I said, they are very ordinary, but they simply allow us a place to be on a regular day with others. And it's been such a great grounding metaphor for me to think about it in a way that's more invisible, maybe on the level of my own soul. When I start to get carried away, when I feel that need rise up in me for appreciation or validation, I have to build something. I wonder and I ask myself, how can I sit down on a bench on the inside? What might that look like? And man, it's made a big difference for me.
Well, and when you talk about the bench and coffee, and I'm just reminded about how we tend to go through these drive-thrus and we get these huge coffees and we wolf down our coffee on the way to, you know, the 13 different things we're doing throughout the day. And I had a nanny who went away for a couple of years and lived in Europe, and she came home and she said, that's what bothers me more than anything else, because when you're in Europe, people sit down in the afternoon and they have that cup of coffee with someone else. They would never dream of drinking coffee by themselves, because that's the time when you get to connect with someone and the coffee tastes better. And I always think about that when I'm picking up my coffee. Boy, this would taste better if I just pulled over and I sat down and talked to that person who's sitting there by themselves, probably thinking I would be crazy.
Oh, that's so good. I went to a coffee shop, local coffee shop, the other day, and I had my computer. I was going to get some writing done, and I walked in, I ordered my coffee, and I said, now, can you tell me the Wi-Fi code here? And he said, oh, we don't have Wi-Fi. And I looked at him like he was crazy. But the coffee shop was full of people talking to one another. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, well, unfortunately, I have to leave because I need to get work done. But it was so, like, it was almost like, oh, man, that thing I write about always comes back to have to remind me that I have to live this, and I love finding people who are doing it. Unfortunately, sometimes it gets in my way of being productive.
Well, you still need to write those things for us, so you're going to have to find Wi-Fi with your coffee
right.
so that we can enjoy our coffee with others.
That's good.
So what is one way that you kind of daily remind yourself of those small moments and how you need to take that breath when you start to get engaged with that hustle and bustle and all the things that you need to do and accomplish?
Well, I have come up with a few super practical ways that work for me, and maybe someone can hear these and come up with a better one that works for them. But one very simple thing that I do is sometimes when I pray in the morning, especially when I feel fidgety, like when I'm sort of sitting there, but my foot starts tapping and I start to want to make a to-do list as I'm like trying to focus, I will simply grab a simple bowl. I actually got a bowl at the Goodwill for 50 cents just for this purpose. And so I'll, instead of just sitting there with my hands folded in my lap, I will hold a bowl in my hands when I pray, as a simple reminder that my soul is not meant to bear weight. In other words, it's meant to receive something from God. And so the bowl is just a visual or very tangible, something to do with my hands, number one. And it's sort of the grounding in that way. But it's also a reminder that that our souls need a little space to breathe. And so I know that, like, if your house is cluttered, you can Google, you know, how to declutter my house, and you'll get all kinds of advice. But when it comes to the level of our souls, if you Google how to declutter your soul, you might find a few things, but that's something less available. It's not something we think about, because why would you need to do that? But I really think we do, and holding a bowl when I pray is one really tangible, simple, maybe even silly way that actually does work for me to sort of be still and quiet in the midst of a fast-moving world. And you get up and you can move on, but it helps me sort of to be present in the moment. And then one other thing I do that is very simple is I tend to keep a journal, but I know not everyone is a journaler. And so if you're not, if you don't like to keep a journal, just let this appeal to your list-making side. But one thing I do is I have a sort of a planner that I keep with me all the time, and I will keep my, you know, my notes, my sermon notes, I keep my grocery list in there, everything is sort of all in one place. But something else, in order to sort of keep myself mindful of these small moments and where Christ wants to show up in my small moments and sort of slowing me down, is amidst my to-do list and everything else, I keep just a little bullet point list. And I call it a "these are the days of" list. And on that list, sometimes I'll just be, it'll be lunchtime or, you know, evening or whenever, I'll just grab my journal and I'll start to make some dots. And I'll say, you know, these are the days of bullet point. And I'll just say, being the tooth fairy for my son. These are the days of taking the girls to volleyball camp. These are the days of making salmon for dinner. And I simply list some things that are true of our life right now. And it may sound silly, but for me, it just reminds me sort of, this is what our Tuesdays are made of. These are the things I'm thankful for. And it just sort of helps to keep me in the day rather than rushing ahead.
It sounds like those sheets. I don't know if your kids have ever brought sheets home from school where they have to fill in the blanks of, I like my mom because, and then they have to fill in a blank, or my mom is nice to me in this way, or anything. Anyway, they will write things exactly like you just mentioned, because she reads to me, because she sings my favorite song, because she helps me with the piano. Yeah. And sometimes we do kind of look past those things because we're thinking about, well, I need to help him with his piano because he has a recital next week. And so I need to get him ready. And so our intent is so different than what they actually receive from us. And sometimes it's nice to be able to sit and look at that perspective of what are they thinking they're receiving from us?
It's so good. And another thing is, I think of one of my favorite verses is Colossians 1:17, and it says that he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And I think about that on a very tangible level, that my spirit, my soul, and my body, he holds me together, and that I'm one complete person. And so I can't separate my soul, my mind, my will, my emotions, my body, my spirit out from each other. It's all just one thing. And so to sort of engage in spiritual practices with my body, with writing with my actual hand and holding a bowl in my actual hand while I'm doing something that's maybe more meditative or spiritual, it sort of reminds me how he holds it all together, that it's all connected. And it's sort of a grounding thing.
So when you think about small moment living and you're thinking about your work specifically, if there's people who are kind of listening over their lunch hour and they're thinking, well, I do want to do small moment living, but I want it to apply to my work as well. How has living in small moments helped you in the way that you work?
Well, here's what it's done for me. It has helped me to focus to see if there's a difference between my effort and the outcome, because I think a lot of times in our work, at least in my work, I am focused on the outcome, and often I can't control the outcome. And so that's where the fast-moving, the anxiety, the fear and need to control sort of comes in, because I'm trying to, like, manage the outcome and make sure these numbers get out right and make sure that this many people show up for this thing and make sure that, that people respond to something in a certain way, instead of remembering that I can plant the seed, but I can't make it grow. Remembering that my job is to bring my small lunch to Jesus, and it's his job to feed the 5,000 people. Remembering that there's no more wine at the wedding. What do? Well, we just bring the water pot to Jesus and trust him with the miracle. That is, in my work, that is the most encouraging thing to consider, is the difference between my effort that I do in the power and presence of Christ, but I release outcomes into his hands.
That is just golden right there. If you're listening today and you want to hear more from Emily, you know, we still have 2 copies of her book to give away. We'd love to get those in your hands. Or if you have a question for her, you want to share a story, maybe something at work that's happening that allows you to live in those small moments or something with your family, well, we'd love to have you ask her that question as well. You can call us at 877-933-2484. We have one more break to take, and then we will be back to kind of close out with Emily as far as what small moment living is all about, how we can get there, and how we can find Christ in there as well. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
Gift to be simple, it's a gift to be free, it's a gift to come down where you are to be.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. That song kind of takes me back to church camp. Does that take me back, Ted, as well? He's nodding a little bit. I remember singing that church or that song, and it is. It's just about simple living we're talking about today. We're talking to author Emily Freeman about her book, Simply Tuesday, just finding small moments to not only look for God in those small moments, but to look at our own life through those small moments. And Emily, you know, we have all of those big, huge things that are happening in our lives that we can't avoid. I mean, how do small moment living, how does that compare with sweet 16 parties and birthday weekends and prom and things that seem so big to us at the time?
It's so funny because those are big moments and big important ones, you know, and that's our life is there too. But even when you look at those, I remember on my wedding day, it's so funny to have memories come to you and you're like, what is, I don't even know I remember that. But I remember on my wedding day, getting ready in the bathroom of the church and sort of like realizing that, oh, wait, like I just, there were little things that I hadn't thought through. Cause you're thinking like getting married, big day. And there were a couple of details that I sort of overlooked. And then you sort of like, ah, but my job as the bride is to not overlook the details. But I remember getting ready and looking at myself in the mirror and thinking, I cannot believe that this day is actually here. It's sort of like it hit me. But I remember it because it was such a small, simple moment of sort of putting my earrings in on that big day, and that the day was big. But even those big things are still just a sequence of small moments one at a time. And I've found when I see it that way, I tend to enjoy the big things more because they don't come as much with such an expectation or such pressure. But instead, it's sort of like, I'm going to take this day one day at a time. I remember in Christmas of 2010, we here in Greensboro, I live in North Carolina, and we don't get snow a whole lot around here. But that Christmas Eve, it started to snow, and it did not stop until the day after Christmas. And it was like Christmas. It was such a big deal, like snowing on Christmas. For us, this is a big deal. And I remember saying out loud to my dad, like, I was sort of spinning around our living room. Like, I have my camera and the kids and I want to go outside and play. And they were like, I was overcome with the bigness and the like specialness of the day that I couldn't enjoy it. It was too big. And I remember he was sort of sitting on the sofa and he had a book in his lap and he was like, just take it a moment at a time. Just let the day be what it is and enjoy that it's snowing on Christmas. And as I look back, that was my most enjoyable moment of that Christmas, was him reminding me there are small moments to be found, even in the big moments of life.
I do. As you were talking about your wedding, I remember my aunt stopping me several times during that day and at night, saying, I'm just going to stop you right now. I want you to look around and see what this day is all about. Just take this in. And then, you know, we'd go on, another hour would go by, craziness would ensue, and she would do it again, and she would do it again. And I remember those very specific times when I looked at who was dancing, when I looked at the different tables of people enjoying themselves, when I looked at my husband or my parents. It's true. It's such a good exercise for our lives that seem to spin out of control so quickly. Yeah. And especially I think about that when I look at my children. Because I remember thinking when they were little, oh, I need this time to pass. I can't stand it any longer. And now looking at one of them as a teenager thinking, oh, please let me go back to when he was three because it's going too fast. So that
it's
small
so
moment, living it is lifelong. It's an exercise we need to learn lifelong.
Well, and those moments that your aunt stopped you and had you look and pause, don't you think you were just getting a glimpse of heaven? I just feel like that it's those, but it wasn't that the big moment of, okay, pause so now and recognize how expensive your cake was. You know, it wasn't that she was pointing out. It was family. It was relationship. It was celebration. It was love. And we have that every day if we look for it and see it. And that's, I feel like the way God has put eternity in our hearts. And those are the times that we get little glimpses of it.
Well, funny aside, she also brought me to the stairs when the people who were loading up my 17-tier wedding cake and dropped three of them on the stairs said, look at this, too. This will be funny someday.
Today is that day.
That's exactly true. Well, what about changes in your family? What changes have taken place in your family due to how you've embraced the small moment living?
You know, for me, just to speak very personally, to write a book about small moment living in a fast-moving world, to write a whole book about what it means to not let your soul be held hostage by hustle is a great challenge, because guess who is going to have to live it more than anybody? This girl. And so when you launch a book into the world, there's a lot of planning and details and hustle that comes along with it, and some of that is healthy and good. The problem for me is when I allow that hustle to settle down deep into my soul and I start to try to apply the rules of my schedule to my soul, because the truth is they do not follow the same rules and they do not speak the same language. And so I think that this book, more than any of my other ones, just even in just the actual practical launching of it, just speaking personally, I've had to make some really clear decisions. I haven't traveled as much when this book has come out because of what the book is about. I feel like I have to have some margin in my personal life in order to speak honestly about this message. Someone just a week or so ago asked me if I would, and so kind, emailed and asked if I would come and share at their small group. They live about 30 minutes away, and they are having a small group, and they're talking about the book, and they would love it if I would come. And one line in her email, she's so kind, but one line she said was, I know you're really busy, but I'm just wondering, you know, I know you probably can't, and I know you're really busy, but if you could, we would love to have you. And part of me thought, you know what, I would love to go and talk about my writing and the book and the message with kind, smart women, and I would leave there encouraged. I know that I would. But the truth was, I'm not really busy. Our family, we schedule our lives right now on purpose. We schedule in margin, which is actually more difficult sometimes than having a full schedule. It's harder to say no than it is to say yes. But my answer to her was, thank you so much. I love hearing that you're meeting. But I can't, my heart would love to meet with you. But the truth is, I'm not very busy. And the reason is because I say no to things like this, is that the reason why I'm not busy, I have to keep it that way. And that's why I'm not able to do all of the lovely, beautiful things that I would sometimes like to do. But I think that has been, for me, the biggest change in my family is recognizing where I am hustling and paying attention to, you know, being able to look into my children's eyes and my husband's eyes and see when that's starting to affect them, and then making the necessary changes that need to be made.
Oh, that is so wise and such a great exercise for many of us. I mean, we can see it in the eyes of the people who we spend our lives with, who we care about.
Yes.
And once we see it in their eyes, it's almost like, uh-oh, it's teetering on being too late. So I need to grab
yes.
it right now
yes.
so that it's not
right.
too late. And then
point.
Kind of right that wrong. I'm going to read something that you wrote that was along that same line as well. You said you were talking about just creating intentional space, time for you so that you could help others. You say, I know I need this intentional space for my soul. I value being quiet and still in the deepest part of who I am. But in these moments of silence, I'm not sure what to do with myself. This fast-moving world supports a language the soul does not speak, and it takes courage to emerge in a land that isn't necessarily home. Today, it's time to practice creating a safe space for my soul to come out. So how necessary is that time for you to create where you can be connecting with God and yourself so that you can help others?
It's everything. I just don't know how in my life I can't be creative. I don't have new ideas. And I don't just mean creative in my writing or my work, but creative in the kitchen or creative with my kids or have creative solutions for conflict with my husband when I'm not taking some soul space. And let me tell you, the soul does not just come out quickly. It's I read Parker Palmer says the soul is like a wild animal. And if you go trudging through the woods, okay, soul, it's time to come out. It's not coming out. You got to give it some time. You got to sit in silence. And slowly the soul will begin to emerge and you can start to see what's really going on here beneath the surface. But that takes time. But that time is so valuable and sacred. But sometimes we just need to remember that we have permission to do that.
Mm. So if there's someone listening today saying, I need to do that, I need to recognize the small moments with my kids, I need to start praying more and spending more time with God, where would you suggest that they start if you were able to give them one suggestion for today?
Well, first I would say, remember there's never ending condemnation and that we always have it's just one step into the presence of Christ. It's even no matter how far away you've gotten, it's just one step back into his presence that he's never really left. But the second thing I would say on, if you go to simplytuesday.com, I've created a series of free videos that you can just watch online where I give, each video is maybe 4 minutes, where I give super practical places to start, to sort of begin to create space for your soul to breathe. And what might that look like even in the midst of your busy life? And those videos, like I said, are free at simplytuesday.com.
Hmm. And what other, are there other places where people, I know you blog quite a bit, where can people catch up with your writing?
Sure. So if you visit emilypfreeman.com, don't forget the P, that is where pretty much all of my blog writing can be found, other books I've written, and of course, all the information about Simply Tuesday as well.
And as we go into this busy fall and as we start preparing for the holidays, what's one suggestion you can give for us as to remember to look at those small moments?
I think the main thing, one phrase that always comes in my mind is to release your obsession with building your life and trust in the life Christ is building within you. And the way he does that is one small moment at a time.
Mm. Emily, thank you so much just for sharing with us today and for just being such a great witness for us to know that slowing down is not going to hurt us, but it's going to enrich us so that we can help others. Thanks so much for doing that. We only have about a minute left, but would you ever just pray for everyone who's listening today who was connected somehow to something that you said and maybe wants to look for their small moments as well?
Sure, I would be glad to. Father, thank you for your kindness. Thank you that you are with us. I pray that anyone who's listening, if we feel overwhelmed with our work, with our desire to grow and determine and fill and control, I pray you would remind us that all outcomes belong to you. And that we are simply invited to plant and to bring all of ourselves and our work, our families and our lives, and all of our small moments into your presence. Thank you for being our kind companion as we build our benches so we may be kind companions for those who come to sit. We pray in your name. Amen.
Emily Freeman, thanks so much. And thanks for writing this just beautiful book, Simply Tuesday, Small Moment Living in a Fast Moving World. If you're listening today and you caught just a bit of the program, but you want to hear it in its entirety, you can go to myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and you'll be able to get a podcast, listen to the full podcast of the show a little bit later on today. And thanks, as always, for listening to Connecting Faith. And Emily, best of luck to you as you launch this book and go into the busy time as well.
Thanks, Joe.
Have a great day. You've been listening to Connecting Faith.